Radio Network.
My greatest fear about the Common Core curriculum is that people will take it and think if it's not in the Common Core, it's not essential.
Standardization right now, I think they have the danger of narrowing the curriculum, trying to force every child to be passionate about the same thing. So if you are not passionate about that kind of math that's been prescribed, you are stuck.
I've never had a drawing class. If I drew something, it would be a stick figure, and it would look like maybe a 7 or 8 year old had done this drawing. And I think that's, you know, largely a part of our schooling and the session with all we care about, probably because on average across the board, we're not so good. We think, well, at the very least, we have to be good at English and math, and we're not even good at that.
Hi, welcome to Body, Mind, and Child with Ray Pika.
The system is broken, and teachers know it. They know that finding the one right answer to questions on standardized tests isn't true learning. It isn't going to offer today's kids what they need to survive and thrive in the 21st century. But for the time being, it's a system we're stuck with. Talking with me today about how teachers can offset the idea of one right answer are Elaine Starko, Yong Zhao, and Justin Snyder. Welcome. Yong, you contend that having to find the correct answer discourages creativity. Briefly tell us about that.
The big issue, I think, right now is we're confused about the ultimate goal of education, and we're seduced by test scores, which is very simple and easy to measure. Well, you know, what's actually valuable is creativity and entrepreneurship, which is very hard to measure. So I think in the U.S. right now, you know, we have had a tradition that allowing teachers to at least some kind of autonomy to cultivate creativity and not to stifle entrepreneurship. I think right now with the push for standardization and standards, and again seduced by this amazing test score, so we are abandoning that in our classrooms, and hope somehow, some way we can help reverse that.
I agree. Elaine, why does creativity matter?
Well, clearly, as Dr. Zhao points out repeatedly and very well, that it's essential for the economy. But the other piece of it is if we want students to learn things in depth, in-depth learning requires that students do something with the knowledge rather than just repeat it. And so I think sometimes we look at this and think this is a dichotomy. Either we focus on student learning or we focus on student creativity, when the fact is that they're mutually supportive. If we teach well and we teach for understanding, we can teach for creativity at the same time. And if we don't, we're not teaching for understanding either.
Yong, these times call for innovators, but we're schooling children to be memorizers and test takers. So what would schooling for entrepreneurship and innovation look like?
I think the schools that cultivate our creativity would start with students' passion, interest, and strength. We should have much more personalized curriculum. That is, the children would be following their passion and schools are there to support them, not trying to teach about prescribed set of content. That's the danger. I think now we have the authority from the state now to the federal government prescribing what students should be passionate about, should be interested in that. That's the danger. And we should move towards more personalized, strength-based education. Education is to support the strength, not fix their deficit. And number two, I think our schools should be focused a lot more on product-oriented learning. That is, our children should be engaged in making things that's meaningful to themselves or to other people. And finally, we need to have a globalized campus. The three elements, that is the student-driven curriculum, product-oriented learning, and the globalized campus, are the three elements I have described in my new book, and the one that's talk about creativity and entrepreneurship.
Thank you, Yong. So, Justin, what are your thoughts as you're listening to this?
Well, I think, you know, a large part of the problem that has been hinted at, but not said explicitly, is the narrowing of the curriculum that comes with standardization and an obsession with test scores. So, you know, as everybody knows, under NCLB, it's all been about English and math. And I think back to my own education. I'm 35 years old, so I graduated from high school in 1995. But even back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s when I was in school, I can think of a single course I took, and it was in sixth grade, that had anything to do with the traditional type of creativity we think about in art or music. And I took a course called choir, where we had to sing, and I was told I was horrible. So I didn't ever sing again. It was said to me in a way by the choir director as, you know, this is a hopeless problem. There's nothing that can be done. And so music was never a part of my life until I graduated from college and I became very interested in classical music. to the point where I've gone to about 2,000 concerts in the last 15 years, which is kind of crazy if you think about it. That's almost every second day. But I was entirely turned off, first by the lack of any classes, and second by this notion that you can't learn to be good at something. And I think that's, you know, largely a part of our schooling and the obsession with all we care about, probably because on average across the board we're not so good. We think, well, at the very least, we have to be good at English and math, and we're not even good at that. But I think that's very problematic because the curriculum gets narrowed, and, you know, it's actually the case that broadening the subjects can help students discover other areas in which they're interested in Excel, and that can raise achievement across the board as well.
Let's do some problem solving. Elaine, what three things can I as a teacher begin doing tomorrow that will help counter the idea of one right answer?
First of all, I think it's really important that when we look at standards, we think of them as the floor, not the ceiling. My greatest fear about the Common Core curriculum is that people will take it and think if it's not in the Common Core, it's not essential. When even the Common Core says that it doesn't enumerate all the things people need to be able to learn. So that's thing number one. If we take whatever it is we're trying to teach, whatever standards we have to meet, and then say, now what's next? What's the next step? How do you learn this thing? How do you innovate with this thing? That will be one thing. I think it's very important to recognize that creativity doesn't happen just in the arts, although heaven knows it happens there. Creativity happens in the sciences. It happens in the social sciences. And to the degree that we help students become original and investigative and questioning in all disciplines, that's supportive of creativity across the board. I have a long spiel, but which I obviously can't give you, about three keys. One of them, though, is looking at having a creativity-friendly classroom across the board, looking at it being an atmosphere where students understand that it's desired that they be inventive, it's desired that they be questioning, and that sometimes they get to do those things around their own interests. Maybe not all the time, but sometimes. We teach them explicitly about creativity and creative thinking, and we also teach them how people are creative in the disciplines we're teaching. So if I'm teaching history, I learn not just the facts, but where does history come from and how do historians investigate? After all, people are creative in history too. It's just a matter of how they investigate it.
Yang, what would you like to add to that?
I just want to add that sometimes we mistake our luxury to be able to offer a broad curriculum in the U.S. as a waste of time. Therefore, we focus on what we call STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. And I grew up in a village in China. I could not have access to the music programs, art programs, or any other programs. I think back to Elaine's comment is that we're really talking about two issues. One is that how broad you are. Are we trying to take care of as broad, as diverse a state of talent? And the second question has to do with within each discipline. I absolutely agree that every discipline needs some sort of creativity and entrepreneurship. And again, that actually in the U.S. we might be missing. So the only thing I think I would like to add is that not only we have to have a broad curriculum, but also we have to rethink about how we teach mathematics. Therefore, all the international tests right now trying to compare American students with students in other countries may not be as wise as some of the policymakers are making of it. I think it's there are just simply different types of activities, different types of talents that need to be cultivated in different countries.
But Yang, what can I, as a single teacher, do to promote creativity and innovation and entrepreneurship in my classroom, despite the fact that we have this system right now?
I think as a teacher, that first of all, you know, really look hard at your students, trust your students, and give the students some autonomy to develop their passion. And number two, try to create an environment that you would support that passion instead of trying to simply focus on test scores. And I know test scores may be important for the teacher evaluation, but I think you have to perhaps, you know, for the sake of the child, for the sake of the future of a nation, you have to give up that, you know. It's very tough, but I think this time is very important to be a guardian of students' dreams instead of become a bureaucrat of some silly standard.
Guardian of students' dreams. Justin, your advice?
Well, I was just thinking back to an English assignment. I mean, even how a teacher assigns an essay to a class and the range of possibility can foster or stifle creativity. And I thought back to junior year of high school. We read The Great Gatsby, as so many juniors do. And my teacher gave us as an essay an assignment of writing an obituary for Jay Gatsby from the narrator's perspective, Nick Carraway. And that required us to first kind of mimic and master the style of Nick Carraway, but it also required us to become familiar with the style of an obituary. How do you write an obituary? And that's a different kind of thinking and different skill set than kind of your standard straightforward English essay. So I think teachers really do need to think about the type of work they're assigning their students.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I am passionate about this topic, so I really thank you, Yong, Elaine, and Justin, for taking the time to be here and for weighing in on it. I believe Yong is absolutely right when he says we're confused about the ultimate goal of education. I don't know if memorizing facts could ever have been considered true learning, but in today's information age, where facts are literally at our fingertips, memorizing them is a senseless waste of time. Why does creativity matter more? Because, as Elaine stated, creativity is not exclusive to the arts, although we need those as well. Creativity is what Steve Jobs possessed. Creativity will keep our industries flourishing. Creativity will help us deal with climate change and overpopulation. Creativity will find a cure for cancer. So if there's just one modification you can make in your classroom to become, as Yong said, a guardian of your students' dreams, please make it. By the way, do you see that little like button on your screen? Yes, right there in front of you in the pop-up box. Well, if you appreciate Body, Mind, and Child, and you want to keep these programs coming, click that thing for me, would you? Thanks. You've been listening to Body, Mind, and Child with Ray Pika.
This program is produced by Jack Street Media as part of the Affiliate Nanocasting Network. Thanks for listening.